Escape the Earth. Welcome to Escape the Earth. We are a sci-fi and fantasy podcast broadcasting from an undisclosed location within the San Antonio Public Library. We are supported by the library and by the San Antonio Public Library Foundation. So a big shout out to them. I'm Mary Elizabeth, and the other crew members today are Alyssa.
Hi, everybody.
And Tim.
Cheers.
Today, we are going to be talking about Brenna Rainey's The Meister of Decimen City. Before we get into that, we just want to warn everyone about a couple of things. First, there will be spoilers. We go into this assuming you have read the book, so we aren't going to tiptoe around anything. If you haven't read the book, hit the pause button, go read it, and come back. Part of our goal is to encourage people to read the books. Second, this is geared towards adults. We're not potty mouths, but sometimes the subject matter will not be for youngling ears.
Thank you, Mary Elizabeth. I'm Tim. I'm going to give you a little short about section on Brenna Rainey, and this comes directly off of BrennaRainey.com. I love their about section. It is the best written about section I think I've ever read. So I'm just going to read it directly. Brenna began her writing career with Amelia Bedelia fan fiction on hand-stapled printer paper. Now, who didn't begin their writing career that way? Me. Her early original work was entrusted to gel pens and floppy disks. Floppy disks! How long has it been since you've seen a floppy disk? Then ballpoint and flash drives, and briefly, receipt paper from her first job. In her academic period, she produced dry and esoteric works for which she was awarded a master's degree. She has also dabbled in visual media, and her minimalist comic, Ice Cream Money from Grandma, hangs proudly on her grandmother's refrigerator. She resides in Texas, where she teaches for a living and bakes for fun. And I bet she also raises dinosaurs.
I hope so.
We certainly got the land for it.
So, were you going to give us a synopsis today?
I sure am. This one comes from the book jacket. No one cares that you cured cancer if you also cloned a horde of dinosaurs and let them rampage down the street. Super genius and quasi-villain Rex normally can't go a week without accidentally endangering Decimen City with her science shenanigans. It's been 2 weeks since her genetically engineered dinosaurs rampaged through town. A good streak for her. But the peace is broken when actual villain Last Dance sets his sights on Decimen. And he wants Rex's help. Before Rex can say, "I didn't do it!" Superheroes who've dragged her to jail on her worst days are crowding her lab to press gang her into quasi-herodom. Rex would rather stay out of it and deal with the dinosaurs that keep calling her mom, but she can't ignore that she was somewhat responsible for Last Dance's villainy. She kept a very disorganized lab, and he was such a nosy brother. She failed to help him back then, but maybe she stops him now and keeps the heroes fooled. She can finally set things right.
Dun, dun, dun.
It feels so heartwarming.
It does feel like a dun-dun-dun. The questionable dun-dun-dun.
So, when we talked about this initially, I said that it reminded me a lot of the tone generated by John Scalzi. There's definitely a lot of humor involved. Alyssa, you said you felt like this book had been written by a therapist. What led to those feelings?
Oh, well, it is very funny. The humor is awesome. But there is definitely a serious side to this book as well. Mm-hmm. There's lots of discussion of people's feelings, lots of discussion of trauma, interpersonal relationships, dysfunctional family relationships. And then the main character is really trying to recover from and grow from and out of like traumatic experiences. That the self-deprecation jar, for example. Right. So So you've got our main character, T-Rex Anderson, who's a super genius and is, got this history of trauma, and they're trying to grow and do better. And they're living with their best friend slash lawyer slash therapist. It feels like that character really feels very therapeutic to me, and that's Flora Shea. And the Flora Shea is helping Rex improve herself. And one of the ways they do that is with the self-deprecation jar. So every time Rex says something that where she's dissing herself, Flora's like, "You gotta put a dollar in the jar."
I love that. It's so the idea of a oh my goodness. So the jar is usually like a cuss jar, but that it's like, no, we all do this, and I guess we don't really I don't really realize it when when I'm just like, ugh, I guess that's just how my life is, but it makes you aware of it, and I like that. It made me aware of like, do I do that too? Probably.
Yeah, Flora Shea's her accountability partner and her psychological growth.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, and the way that she's also assisting Rex is helping them constantly repair their public image.
Oh yeah. They have Aya, the AI, becoming more self-aware as the book goes on. I like how she gathers around her people who once they take the time to get to know her, which I think is just how it always happens, is once they take time to get to know her, there is she generates loyalty. Well, I guess not through everybody in the organization that's observing her, but with Lewis and Peter who have to come and be her babysitters, she generates just this people who want to be around her and hang out with her and be her friends. Although it doesn't take hold with everybody.
I think people who really get to know her, I mean, she has charisma and she's good to people in general, and she's honest
Yeah.
about who she is. She's very authentic, which I think is
Yes.
super appealing, right? That's a
Yes, yes,
quality
yes.
that I like in other people. I think that's a quality that humans are attracted to in other humans. But the people that don't like her seem to have preconceived notions about her that they can't
Yes.
shake,
Yeah.
right? Like the
Absolutely.
protectors, particularly Jester, who's
Yeah,
like the
Jester
sacrifice.
was not my favorite.
He's got her pigeonholed. He doesn't
Yeah.
really get to know the real her.
I think that's kind of a theme of this book where you have pigeonholed people into certain labels and ideas and how detrimental that can be to not only the person's psyche that you're pigeonholing, but also yourself, because it doesn't open you up to possibilities of this person can be good and they could be good for us and the world and just in general. People are multifaceted. They're not black or white in the idea of good or bad. So,
Yes, that's the whole more to the story hashtag that threads throughout.
yes. Yes.
So I really do like that more to the story angle, but the Meister also it her biggest flaw is really her failure to incorporate all the possibilities of what could go wrong with the things that she's doing, right? So this is a superhero sort of adjacent tale or an alternate superhero reality. And the Meister is responsible for creating not only the greatest superhero, but also creating the greatest supervillain. They are both her siblings. And so she feels responsible for wrecking both of their lives in a way. Is that
She is responsible for wrecking both of their lives.
but like she was a kid. They ran into her lab that she had in the garage. So it's like one of those things where how responsible can you be when you're a child? I would think they were all kids when this happened. But yeah, there it was her lab that they ran into, and that things got messed up
Where
for
were the
themselves.
parents?
Yes. Where were the parents? The parents seem a little toxic.
They're in Florida.
They, yeah, so when they were children, Rex only ever wanted to be like her big sister. And her big sister was like always, I guess, the big si sibling that was having to watch over everybody, parentified maybe. Then she had their twin brother. And then tragedy happens with her sister getting turned into a superhero, turned all blue with super strength and telekinesis. And but then when they were trying when she was trying to but then Rex tries to help her, and she tries to take away those because that they weren't she would didn't see herself as a superhero. She saw herself as, I guess, a freak or something. And so Rex does try to help her in her because they're even though she's still a child to come up with a machine. And then the brother gets zapped, and he has super strength and mind reading.
We
Go
did
ahead.
an informal poll at the library, and we're asking people, would you rather be able to talk to animals or read everybody's minds? And everybody said, I would rather talk to animals.
Oh,
So
totally.
just to get an idea of what the brother deals like, he turns into this super villain, but he's driven by this fact that like he can't even sleep. Because others' thoughts are intruding on him constantly, and it doesn't matter where he is. If I understand correctly, that was what was driving the virus creation, because the Meister had created a virus that created a army of zombies, basically. And
Mutie.
right, and that
Yeah, that was the
was.
vaccine.
No, Mutie was the virus
Oh,
because I
Mutie
think
was
it
the
was supposed to
virus.
mute people's thoughts. It was supposed to quiet down their brains so
Oh,
that
okay.
Sam
That
could
makes
feel comfortable
sense.
out in the world, but it ended up making people into zombies.
Okay, I was reading that differently. I thought it was like it was mutated. It
I assumed it was mute, like put
mutation.
everybody on mute.
That makes more sense. That makes a lot more sense.
Which could be useful. If you just had a remote control that you could mute people, that would be extremely useful.
I definitely
That
use it on certain
is
people more than others.
right.
Not naming any names.
Me. So, one thing we have to talk about is how this plot has more holes in it than a block of Swiss cheese.
Wah, 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 wah. Why do you say that, Tim?
Whose plot? The evil villain's plot or the plot of the book?
So
Or the hero's plot or observes plot?
we see everything through the eyes of the Meister, right? And
Right.
I think the Meister is a completely untrustworthy narrator because of her dislike of cheese. Who doesn't like cheese?
Not to be trusted.
Ah, but the cheese is a metaphor.
What's the
Is
cheese a
it? Ooh, what are you
metaphor
seeing?
for?
Wait, the cheese is a metaphor for sex. Okay,
Oh,
let me read to you page
it
12.
now.
Hold
Okay.
on. Because she's asexual, she doesn't like cheese.
Right,
So if
right,
you
right.
look, if you read page 12, that's when it finally dawned on me. I was like, why are they focusing on her not liking cheese?
I
And they
didn't
talk about it
catch
so
that.
much. I
That's
was like, why is everybody always
brilliant.
eating pizza in this book all the time? They're
All the
only ever
time.
eating
Yeah.
pizza, right? Okay. So page 212. And so Rex is with the protectors of the world, all those superheroes, and they're having this conversation. Viv looked pointedly away from her team to Rex and said, grab some pizza. We're about to start. The others didn't protest, but the gazes that slid away from her were as telling as the ones that stayed fixed. Having every reason to follow Viv's lead, Rex resisted the urge to draw her shoulders up and crossed behind the couches toward the kitcheny space in the back. No thanks, I don't like cheese. The shuffle of Pixie turning around on a couch caught Rex's attention, and she stopped short at the hero's look of distress. That's so sad. Cheese is one of the best things in life. Don Conger offered, "There are many kinds of cheese. Perhaps you merely have not found the variety to suit your taste." "Sounds like you're scared of it," Undertaker said as Catman stretched languidly across her to spear a piece of pepperoni on his claw. "You should try it again," Manta Man said. "Cheese improves with experience." "In my time, all who refused to share cheese with their king were burned as witches," King George announced. The jester sneered as he piled pizza on his plate. "She's just looking for attention. No one doesn't like cheese." "I can't imagine not liking cheese," Pixie said mournfully. "You should see a doctor." "I didn't mean to start a conversation about it," Rex said. "What did you expect after tossing out that information?" Viv asked, arms crossed. "I honestly expected you to keep eating your pizza while I asked to get something else from the fridge." The jester leaned toward Pixie and muttered, "She probably thinks she's better than us because she doesn't eat cheese." This was going well so far. At Manta Man's nod, Rex continued to the kitchen, Lewis on her heels. As she opened the fridge, she looked back with a raised brow. They have strong opinions about something that has absolutely nothing to do with them. Rex had to blink a few times, but if this was the subject he was going with, after that entrance, she'd let it happen. "Go easy. I think I broke you."
It was funny because I highlighted that exact same exchange. I think I broke their worldview.
Oh man, that makes so much sense that it's a metaphor.
It's not cheese. And then if you go back and you look at all the instances where they're talking about cheese in the book.
because if you replace cheese with sex, then yeah,
You get
it's
all the diatribe that asexual people get when they say, "I'm not into that."
Wow, that's brilliant.
Yeah, I feel like the whole book is metaphorical. The cheese
Oh,
discussion is
yeah.
just one brilliant way that it's metaphorical. But all the superhero, supervillain, it's all metaphorical for dysfunctional family
Oh, yeah.
and dysfunctional sibling relationships, right? Like where you have the hero child and you have the scapegoat, like all of the pieces, and then the more to the story and everybody's story belonging to them. Like the whole book is very well crafted that way, where it deals with some pretty hefty topics. But with this clever, light, funny, well-written veneer. Yeah.
I agree with that.
So we have to talk about Catman too. The superheroes in this
Wait,
remind me
did
of
you
the
say
superhero.
Kathmandu? No. Just kidding.
Ba-doom-boom-tsh.
I stole that joke from Tim earlier.
The superheroes in this book remind me of the cast of superheroes from The Tick. Do you remember The Tick?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
By Polar Bear. It's a beautiful day. I'd save the world if I didn't feel so sad. Yeah. And Made in America, no. Those are Tick characters, but we have Catman, who when they want him to go on a mission, they have to lead him out the door with a laser pointer.
Yes.
And then when he's given instructions to keep the Meister, to keep Rex safe, he sticks Rex and Vivid Blue, Rex's older sister, in the cat dimension, which
The cat
is
dimension.
this strange, place that cats go to when they disappear. You know how, like, when you look around, you can't find
Where
your
did
cat
my cat
anywhere.
go?
And
That
so,
happened the other day with me. Could not find that cat. She was in the cat dimension. She was in somewhere in the house the whole time. Was searching the neighborhood. Nope, she came walking out of the bedroom, like nothing. Like, what? Where were you? Now I know.
yeah, they're stuck there, and for some reason the cat dimension time moves more slowly, so minutes feel like hours, and you have to wait for a cat to let you out. So they have to wait for Catman to remember that he put them there, and there are cats popping in and out all the time, and they're like, "Oh, it's another cat." And
In
let's
the cat
see.
dimension, she has that great moment with her sister where she finally, I think, reaches her sister conversationally. Like, she finally gets her to realize what she's been trying to say this whole time about her trauma. I had a really hard time with Vivid Blue because I was like, why is she so angry with Rex? Like, she really blamed Rex hard for all this stuff with the brother. And at one point, where she was accusing Rex, they were like in a hallway, and it was after they had just gotten back from being shot down out of the sky, and they were just going at each other so hard. I felt so bad. I was like, this is terrible. Why are they so, why can't they communicate? But they finally, in the cat dimension, were able to reach each other a little bit better.
I
I
had
think they
no
had trouble.
choice. Well, yeah,
Yeah.
I think they had trouble stepping out of their own worldview of things and their own stories, right? And
Yeah.
that's one of the themes of the book too, is that we, when something difficult happens in life and in family life, you create a story, and that's your story, and each person has their own story, and you're the hero or the victim of your own story. To escape that, and then especially because people go into those roles too for self-protection. You've got this dysfunctional family. You step into a hero role so that you can live with yourself in the dysfunction, right? And so when Rex is asking Viv to shift her worldview, like it's a big ask for that person to step out of where they've found comfort, sanity, stability, and to move into something that's more nebulous or is going to shift their way of thinking. I think that rigidity and that sense of control helps people function in dysfunction.
Right.
Yeah, that whole idea that each person involved in a certain event can experience it from a different angle and build up a slightly different story from it is a huge part of the book. Yeah, the book starts out with the dinosaurs rampaging through downtown of Desamond City, and Rex having to team up with Lightning, who is sort of her arch nemesis, to corral her own creation, the dinosaurs that she created. And you kind of get the feeling at the beginning that the dinosaurs were going to be just sort of a small part introductory to this, but the dinosaurs evolve quite a bit throughout the story.
They certainly do. I think one of the questions we were asking ourselves is who is the best character, or what character do I like? I think it's the collective dinosaurs group that I love the most.
The dinomites?
Yes. They're so wonderful. And I think at one point at the end, they've evolved so much that they create their own country and they're geniuses and right on their own right. And it's a, and she, where is it? Rex asks, well, why do you think I need to do this or something like that? They're like, I think represent them or something. They go, well, we are three, only 3 years old. It was like they're so self-aware.
So they, but you go through the whole spectrum of parenthood with the
Yes.
dinosaur in the space of a few weeks, basically.
Yes, the
Because
babies.
the timeline for this book is not that long. You say you have, the first group of dinosaurs, then you have the baby batch of dinosaurs, and then the dinosaurs are becoming ashamed of their nakedness and fashioning
Yes.
clothes. The dinosaurs are hatching escape plans. And she's like, give them something to do, organize them into little league teams or something. And
You put them on sports teams, and the techs always to pick the wrong thing. They do baseball instead of like soccer that all of them can play.
right,
They
they
are
can't hold the
wonderful.
gloves. But then there's also, them moving to their compound and being away from home and then having the dinosaur party. And she's like, how the hell did they get booze? And Don Conger spoke placatingly from his armchair. It is their first time living away from home. Some rebellion, albeit self-destructive. No, they don't get to rebel. I'm under oversight. So, like, mom's on restriction and they're out partying.
Yes. They are the best characters. They also are able to create a world that accommodates them. They create this country that is for themselves, that they're able to do everything that they wouldn't be able to do in a human world. They even can become this hive mind. I wonder if they are an ideal in the author's mind that, if we could all just get along enough that we can work so well and cohesively together, wouldn't we be better off?
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Do you think of them as like a utopian society?
Maybe. I mean, they sure are kind of headed that way with their genius in science and technology.
And they were created genetically modified humans. It makes me think of Oryx and Crake because one of the characters in that book is trying to create a perfect race of humans.
Oh.
Genetically engineer one. He can never get rid of the singing. We probably need to read that book.
Probably should.
Wait, which book? I was looking for a quote.
Oryx and Crake. Again,
Oh.
Oryx and Crake.
Well, we should add that to our list.
We should add that. Maybe we can invite the author of The Meister of Despond City
To
to
talk
come
about
and
Oryx and
talk
Crake.
about Oryx and Crake with us.
I make a note on that. I mean, Siri, make a note on that.
Or Aya, make a note of that.
That's what he said. Did you get
Oh,
it wrong? Did you misinterpret it like Lewis?
I
You pull a Lewis just now?
I did. I did.
Did you think he was stuttering?
And that's so funny because that's just like a little misunderstanding
Yeah.
in
I
speech, like
didn't.
a failure of communication that
Yes.
creates this huge like,
Huge
okay, you're
rift. Yeah.
right.
Yeah. He writes her
He
off over it. He
misinterprets
does.
the name Aya for her just like stuttering, into this caveman type speech.
Yes, and he's like, oh gosh.
Lewis. Yes, I got it. Okay.
Oh man.
I have such a soft spot for Lewis.
Yeah, he's just also trying to figure it out too.
Yeah.
So confused.
Gentle giant, so kind, so considerate, so thoughtful. The scene in the kitchen
Yeah.
when they run into each other at night
Oh
in the
yeah.
kitchen and he scares her.
Yeah.
And the way
His
he
Hulk.
handles it,
Yeah.
yeah, the way he handles Rex's trauma in that moment, and he becomes a safe person for her to grow through that trauma is such a beautiful scene to me. I really
Right.
love the way the author wrote it and gave Rex that opportunity to move through it and showed that kind of depth of character. Like, he has such a depth of character with his sexuality and with his humanity. He's just very multifaceted. I really appreciate his character a whole ton.
Yeah. And how he handles her panic attack later on. He's just there for her and comforting.
He's healthy and he's compassionate.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He's not as overbearing as Florochet.
Yeah.
Florochet kind of makes me nuts. Like, I feel like the way that she's trying to help Rex is almost overbearing and unhealthy.
Right, the
It's like
mothering.
they're too enmeshed. I feel
Right,
like
I
their
think
friendship
so.
is a little bit too,
Like
they're not as healthy.
she's very much the overprotective mother figure that Rex didn't have growing up. Florishe has filled that spot for her. She's the overprotective person who's going to come in and rescue her and take care of her. And I'm going to make sure everything's right with you, where everything's going to work out. It's like, well, and you should be kind to yourself, type
But then she
person in her life.
fails. She
Yeah.
fails at it and she's like all devastated. She's like, I'm your horrible gay best friend. Like, how did I
Yes.
not realize you were ace and all this stuff? And It's just so, I don't know. It's a
No,
very
yeah,
complex, good relationship
it
as
really
well.
is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But at
The
the
sheep.
same time, I really like that scene where they're doing the first interview with Gorgeous, and they've clearly talked about like what the safe topics are and what you should say, and then you get this whole mental image of Flora just on the sidelines with her hand on her forehead going, "Oh my God, what have I done?"
She's got,
Because it's a train wreck that's barreling out of control and you can do nothing to stop it.
a live interview.
You had a lot of feelings out there, didn't you? Flora has her good points and her bad points.
Which is kind of indicative of the storytelling that everybody's got their flaws, but they have, I mean, even the worst supervillain, Last Dance, he's not really the worst. He's just trying to cope with his life with his like, what would you call it, a disability? I don't know. He's just trying to cope with like how he can move in the world in a way that is not what everybody else has to deal with. So I don't know.
I like the way they bring up comfort with him when they're having Rex and him are having the discussion about the hood and who gets to feel comfortable. Like, well, we're presenting you with the solution, the hood, and you can wear it and then you can feel comfortable. And he's like, I'm the one that has a problem, but why should I always have to be the one? Why can't everybody accommodate me? Why does I have to be the one that,
Wearing the hood,
you're
right.
giving me this half-assed solution that doesn't work for me all the time, and that's good enough, and I should be grateful for that. He's like, hello. So I feel like in some ways, if you call it a disability, there's some parallel there of like, oh, well, we gave you a
Yeah.
ramp or whatever. Like, you know what I
Yeah.
mean? I feel like there's that kind of slap in the face that you see
Right.
through
It's like,
that
well, you
character
have
as well.
that. Yeah. 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 See, it's very, very intriguing. The layers of the onion keep coming off with this book. It
Yeah, it's cool.
really is cool.
It's really cool.
I did feel like it ended on a hopeful note for Last Dance, though, who is Rex and Viv's brother Sam. Because at the very end, we have the part where somebody bumps into her in the sandwich shop and slips the note into her pocket, and it says, "Hi, T, Viv's a bitch. Love you, Sam," which
I like that.
is far different than his previous messages to her.
I like how she does correct it. Like, no, I don't like that. That's
I don't like that language.
I don't
Right? I
like
don't
that
like that
language.
word.
Yeah.
Because he's says some pretty nasty, misogynistic stuff
He
at different points.
does.
Oh,
He
yeah.
was, yeah, he, so he. His character kidnapped Rex. He kidnapped Rex early on. This is why she has what has created most of the trauma in her life and the discord with her sister. And they don't go too much into what exactly he did to her, but it was enough to where she's like, physically intimidated by him, so much so that when Lewis that one time moved in the refrigerator triggered a trauma response from her. So you do know it was drastic. I'm assuming he did beat her. I think there was talk of a black eye.
She was assaulted, she was kidnapped, she was assaulted, and she was forced to work, right? Forced to come up with some kind of a solution to his problems.
I think that's when Mutie was created.
Yeah. I think so.
I didn't put that together, but that seems logical.
Yeah.
Just returning back to the cast of characters also. I feel like Pixie was created off of that Carol Kane character in Scrooged.
I think so. Yeah, she's because she's got like super strength and she's a little bit no nonsense. Yeah.
Like flying tackle.
I do like how she announces her attacks while she's doing them.
And also the superhero King George. What exactly is his power?
What did he even do? I don't know what he ever did.
He proclaimed.
He proclaimed often.
Now the jester had some skills, and while there's some question as to whether where he held his weaponry at,
Right, because all he was wearing was a codpiece and a hat with a bell.
Oh,
I
God.
kept imagining like He-Man boots too. I was like, maybe he's just pulling those
Oh,
knives out of his He-Man boots.
I like that. Okay, I'm gonna. That must be it. It was, yeah, the cast of characters, and then on the supervillain side, the bee lady. What? No, thank you.
Stinger.
Oh, and the kiss or kisser? Oh, I can't remember what she.
Is it Miss Kiss?
Miss Kiss, Miss Kiss. I imagine her as a carny that pulls the knives out of their throat, but she pulls everything out of her
A
throat.
bazooka.
A bazooka.
And they're like, no, honey, put that back.
Put that
Right,
No.
the
It was
other
great
bad
writing.
guys jump on her. You are going to kill all of us. I did like also with Mindbender when they come back from Sam and Viv having their discussion, and they're looking for Mindbender, and down a short trail of fiery destruction, Rex heard the creaks and clatters of a machine, and Mindbender cried out, "Your brute strength is no match for my technology," and Rex groaned. Why would he say that? It never turns out to be true. The dinosaurs struck, and true to tradition, brute strength beat brain power.
I do also like that Rex had been an online friend with Mindbender playing chess, and she's like, he's a super villain.
Oh, that was great. That's a
That was
great
really
detail.
great. There were a lot of laugh out loud chuckles, or mo not just chuckles. I was laughing at this in this.
But the dinosaurs literally go from like an extinct group of former creatures to the most technologically advanced civilization on the planet
Yes.
within a couple of weeks. It's great.
I just love how they're constantly calling mom or mommy. Mom.
And she's always calling them little shits.
Yes.
And then
Endearingly.
there's that one scene where she's flying with the pterodactyl and that they're getting shot at, and the pterodactyl cuss, she's like, "Where'd you learn that language?"
Where the heck did you I think she cusses in that or I wonder.
And some other good scenes there are like when Lewis and Peter have both unknowingly taken some precautionary measures where Rex is concerned, and they're both kind of like acting shifty because they both have something to hide, but it's really the same thing that they're hiding, and neither one of them know it.
Yeah.
I did like that bit. Oh, the three dinosaurs that were born when she was out bar hopping with
Yes,
Peter are named White Russian, Mint Julep, and Long Island Iced Tea.
those babies were so cute.
They were. I know. There wasn't even a picture of them, but I loved them. They were
And all the
so
drama with their
adorable.
parents, and then the social
Yes.
media stuff in the book. The way social media was handled in the book was cool too.
Yes,
Such an
yes,
important part of the story.
yes. They were so cute. I love those dinosaurs.
So, what did you think was going to happen when Sam was taken over by the dinosaur hive mind?
I thought he was they were gonna just kind of keep him, but that wouldn't have really been a great wrap up. But that was interesting because it did force another interaction with the three siblings together at the end to kind of figure out how they were gonna be family still. That's what it felt like.
Right, they held him in place long enough
Yeah.
to allow that to happen. Were you scared for a moment that he might actually assume control of all the dinos?
Oh, no. But now that you say that, I got a brief look. Oh, no, that could
Part two coming soon.
have happened. But it did give also, I think, in that moment, a time for Rex to kind of like maybe actually forgive him, because she does put her arm around him and comforts him while they wait for Vivid Blue. Oh wait, no, that was after Vivid Blue left. I can't remember.
No,
Rex wasn't.
it was before Viv.
It was before Viv. Okay.
Rex
Eh,
wasn't
and
holding a grudge though. It's they make it
no.
clear earlier in the book
No,
that
yeah.
Rex forgave Sam. Like there was no,
You're
she wasn't
right.
holding on to it. Viv kept
But
asserting,
she
like,
wasn't afraid of him, I guess, anymore.
yes.
That's it. That's it. Not so much forgiveness. You're right. She had forgiven already. It wasn't the type of forgiveness that Viv wanted to see from her, though. Where it was like, I forgive you and everything's normal now. It was a no, this I forgive you, but you put me through a lot. I gotta take some time.
Viv wanted Rex to pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah.
She wanted to wash it away, like
Right.
sweep it under the rug.
Yeah. But some things can't just you can't just do that.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that Rex had enough healing from that traumatic experience.
Yeah.
She was able to build her own safety
Yeah.
around Sam by the end.
She's got a whole dinosaur army. No, I'm kidding.
I mean, for real.
For real, she does.
It's,
They
you know,
come in and save her.
right? Those were her creative
They were, yeah.
expressions, her creations, the things that she built that did contribute to her life, quality of life, safety. This book is so very
It's really wonderful.
layered. It's
I
very
know. I
layered for
love how
me.
the titles of the chapters are in reference to the dinosaurs. Dinosaurs at feeding time. Dinosaurs aren't really mentioned in this chapter or in this one, or dinosaurs ex machina.
The physical book is very nice. This printing is very beautiful too. Just the quality of it, the quality of the paper, the little dinosaur track images. If y'all didn't get the hard copy, it's so adorable. And every chapter has the little dinosaur pictures on it. It's
Yes,
really
they're so
nice.
cute. Yeah, I agree.
Library copies are gorgeous if y'all want to pick them up.
It took me a second to realize that on the cover, with because I always was attracted to the eyeball, but these little, I thought they were just slashes, but they're people. They're the superheroes.
Yes.
I thought they were dinosaur slashes, but no.
Did you see the stegosaur at the bottom?
Yeah.
It's cute. It's well done.
The one last thing that we've kind of all danced around it, just the idea that the city still loves Rex. It's like she's a villain, but she's our villain, you know?
Oh yeah, kind of that. Yeah, like they even like she, I guess, wanders around the city probably, and that wanders, but you know, she moves about the city because she doesn't think she's a super villain. She's like, I'm just a scientist curing cancer and riding in this mecha. Because the mech, I love that she wants to anyway. So they do know her. She has, you know, goes to places where she's a regular at, and they do know her. And I guess that goes to like what you were saying before, where she's charismatic, and once you do get to know her, you're like, yeah, she's all right.
She
Just a little
cured
eccentric.
cancer.
She cured cancer
And that
accidentally,
gets,
but she cured cancer.
and she downplays that so much
Yeah.
in the book. You know, it's never, she never plays it up. And she's like, oh, Flora Shea told me not to use that too often.
Right.
The
So
good
that.
things that we do. But the people, I think she's just able to develop a lot of connections. And they didn't talk about that exactly.
Right.
But people related to the more to the story, and they related to the dinosaurs. But those relationships felt like they were established way before that.
Yeah, like the bartender
Yeah, the
called.
shopkeepers.
Yeah, they called because she was out late, and they're like, oh, she's gonna get the oversight's gonna get her. Come get her before she before curfew.
Right. She can't
So they
drive anywhere. Definitely can't drive.
definitely
Need to get her back to base. And then at the
before.
end, when she's in the sandwich shop, the owner of the sandwich shop is like, "What did I hear about you misbehaving while you were?"
That was a really nice way to kind of already establish this world. Like, this has been, she's lived in this world for a long time. This world has been established for a long time. It was a great bit of world building with those relationships already built, established.
I think it cemented the idea that you brought up earlier, Tim, is that she's somewhat unreliable in her perception of herself and her evaluation of herself and her abilities and her value to other people.
It does say at one point, "Why do you keep calling me doctor? My highest degree is a master's in concert piano."
And they're like, yes, Dr. Anderson. Would recommend this book to everybody.
I actually think I would too. I don't know who I wouldn't recommend it to.
It's got a lot. It's got a lot for
Yeah,
everybody.
it does.
I would recommend this book to anybody. I would recommend it to fans of John Scalzi because or Christopher Moore because it has that light sort of humorous touch, and I could see anybody who would like those two also enjoying this one. What about you, Alyssa?
Psychologists. I'd recommend it to my psychologist friends. How about that?
I'd recommend it to people in Wisconsin.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, because of
Wah, wah, wah,
the
wah.
cheese. All of the jokes just keep going over my head.
Oh, Tim, that was so good.
I really am some kind of monster.
There really are a lot of cheeses.
So, yeah, thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode or other episodes we've done, please remember to subscribe or give us a good rating. You can view our book list, reviews, and suggested reads at https://guides.mysapl.org/ete. Write us with stories, suggestions, random thoughts, or interesting sci-fi geek culture info at sapl@gmail.com. Join us next month for our discussion of Legends and Lattes by Travis Baldry.
Bye. See y'all next time.
Adios.
Escape the Earth.